Welcome to the Esri and the Science of Wear podcast. Toronto resident Ingrid Bidet didn't wake up to change the world. She woke up because a souped-up vehicle roared by her apartment at 3 a.m. That's when she decided to try and make her city a quieter place to live. She started by collecting data. Using an inventory of spatial data, she created an intuitive, information-rich, map-based dashboard. By being able to demonstrate the problem visually to people, she quickly found allies who also wanted a quieter life. Because, as Ingrid Bidet says, the exhausting effect of noise makes it the number two urban health risk.
Air pollution is still number one, according to the World Health Organization, and we have done so much for mitigating air pollution. When you think about it, if you cut the noise at the source, you're done.
Ingrid Bidet describes to Esri's Guan Yu how collecting, analyzing, and reporting on environmental health risks helps cities address them.
Welcome to Esri and the Science of Wear podcast. Hi, Ingrid.
Hello, Guan.
We both live in Toronto, the biggest city in Canada, where noise is everywhere. Yet I'm still a bit surprised to learn it's the number two health hazard in urban settings. Tell us, what have you learned about noise in your research?
What I've learned about noise is that we hear sound, but we also feel sound. And when I learned that it has both auditory impacts and non-auditory impacts, that really rang true for me. Because while we can't close our ears, our bodies also can't stop listening. So even if we're not annoyed, we are still harmfully impacted by noise.
Does that mean that when you're asleep and your environment is quiet versus noisy, that will have different impact?
Yes. The definition of noise is actually unwanted and or harmful sound. And so now what we've realized through studies, through sleep studies and all of that, if there are sounds that our bodies are hearing and our ears are hearing, even if we don't wake up, we come out of that deep, restorative, restful sleep. And we may not wake up, but we actually have come out of that place where our body is resting, where our brain is healing, and our brain is sending out hormones and chemicals that are actually meant to heal us. And so if we don't get that opportunity for that deep, restorative, restful sleep, we wake up not feeling good, not being healthy, and then those impacts over time can lead to very significant health outcomes.
How does it tie to some other health issues?
The first one that most people think about is hearing loss. That only happens basically at 85 decibels or above. But if we are exposed to 55 decibels or above, that is the current number. Some people believe it's actually lower than that. And most people are actually, during the day, you are exposed to over 55 decibels. And what that does is it basically puts your body in a bit of this steady state of stress. And what that does is that stresses our circulatory system, our cardiovascular system. So that's why noise can increase the chances of stroke, hypertension, cardiovascular disease, heart attacks. It can also lead to mental health outcomes. And they're also starting to link it to Alzheimer's and dementia.
And tell us, what does a 55 decibel noise sound like?
That's basically normal conversation or background music. It is something that you can easily hear a person sitting beside you, and you don't have to strain to hear it. We generally speak at about 60 decibels. If you can't hear somebody else's conversation, then you are above 60 decibels. So it is actually quieter than conversation. But when you also think about noise, you also have to think about the frequency and the control that you have over that noise. And some people go into very loud environments and they want to. And so we can choose to extricate ourselves from that noise if it feels like it's too harmful, let's say a loud concert, or we can mitigate that with earplugs. But there's many noises that we have no control over. I'm thinking of construction. I'm thinking of sirens. I'm thinking of modified exhausts. I'm thinking of amplified sound. And if we don't have control over those sounds and we want them to stop, that increases the stress levels even more.
You started digging into the issue of city noise because making complaints to the city doesn't work. Tell us your story and why didn't that make your life easier?
What happened was I got woken up by vehicles at 3:30 in the morning. And so I thought, how do I stop this? And we are told in Toronto, we are actually told to call the city for all city services and for all noise complaints. And I found out that a lot of other cities have 311, but some cities don't even have that kind of a front door to the city services. So I was told, you call 311. So I did. And they said, thank you very much, but we can't do anything about moving vehicle noise. That's actually the Toronto police. So then I tried to make a report to the police, and they wanted a license plate. They wanted a picture of the vehicle. They wanted a description. What happened? It's 3:30 in the morning. There is no way that I have that. And even if you think about it, if we're walking down the street and we hear a loud vehicle, we could not take our phone out in time to collect all that information. So what I realized is that the process is broken, and it's not only broken in my city, it's broken in many other cities. And that's where I thought, okay, this is my chance. I'm a process-oriented person and I'm a data-driven person. And so I thought, I'm going to see what I can do to change this scenario, because I'm not the only one that's impacted by noise.
So what I'm hearing is the process is broken because the data that's needed to enforce the bylaw is not easily collected and presented to the police. So what did you do after that?
What I did after that was I took my introductory GIS course at University of Toronto, and that's when I learned about Survey 123. And when I saw Survey 123, I saw my way to collect the data. And I thought that I was alone in how I was responding and how I felt to the noise and the anger that I felt and the frustration. And so I thought, I'm going to see if I can create a community by literally complaining and making noise reports. So I created what was called the Not 311 Noise Report. And I thought, I'm going to let people know that they can make a noise report. And even though the city isn't necessarily seeing our data right away, if we get enough data, they will see it and we will have a compelling story. And so a long story short is we had over 12,000 data points for the survey, and then we were able to present that data to the city. And I created a very simple workflow that basically said the process doesn't work and the data that you're collecting also doesn't work, because once people try and make a noise report for a moving vehicle and it doesn't work, they're not going to do it again. So the data was missing. And so this is how I now visually have been able to share this information with city councilors and city staff. Now there's process changes being put in place to collect a better and more complete data set.
I want to take a few steps back at the beginning when you experienced the noise interrupting your sleep and the process of making complaints is not working. You're thinking about geospatial instantly.
This was during the pandemic, and it was one motorcycle, and it woke me up, and I thought, fine, I'm actually going to time you. So I timed that person, that driver, and I heard that motorcycle for 10 minutes, which was about seven or eight kilometers away that I could hear it. And then I looked out the window, as I have so many times, and I saw all these condos and all of these people that were subjected. And I thought, he woke me up. How many other people did that person wake up? And so that's where I started to look at doing a buffer analysis, for example. And now we know that within 750 meters of a highway, there's 665,000 people based on the 2021 census data that are exposed to peak noise events from highways. Highways are pretty bad, but arterial roads are actually even worse, because an arterial road, you can have two red lights that stop traffic. And if you're in between those two red lights, it drops really nice and quiet, maybe right down to that 55 decibels. And then all of a sudden the lights go green and then you have these noise spikes. And so I did a buffer analysis of how many people live within 100 meters of an arterial road in Toronto. And that was 1.2 million. The number of people that can be exposed to peak noise events and harmful noise events is the majority of the residents, probably in any city.
So you wanted to reach out to these people and hear their voice loud and clear that they are impacted by the noise in the city. And that's what your Not 311 noise report about. What do people need to fill out in this report?
I had to do a couple different versions of it to get it right the first time. And so what ended up happening is it was basically four questions. It was location, it was what was the noise source, time, date, and then annoyance level. And that was a scale out of 10. And so most people were like an 8 or a 9 or a 10. But what was really interesting was then the map that all those points produced. And what the next step is, and this is where geospatial is just magic, because then we can layer in wards, or we can layer in districts, and we can actually see the areas that are the worst or where people are the most impacted. And we can directly understand who those people are and the counselors and influence policy that way.
Tell me more about that. What did you learn about the mapped data when you see all of those points mapped out?
Downtown in the urban areas, our cities are becoming more dense. We have more high rises. And so we actually have more noise canyons. And on the 54th floor, I've had 85 decibel spikes at 3 a.m. And people think, wow, sound travels up that far? Yes, it does. And if you have those glass towers, one across from each other, that sound is just reflected all the way up. So downtown areas are, or dense areas are typically louder, but also then in the suburbs, there are different noise impacts. And for some people, it's sirens. For other people, it's leaf blowers that come during the day. And that is also actually another piece that was really interesting, is because the city would not take a noise report of a leaf blower while it was allowed, which is basically like 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. And so people were annoyed after the pandemic. People were working from home, and suddenly you're on a Zoom call or you're in a meeting, and in come the leaf blowers, and you can't concentrate, you can't hear, and you couldn't make a noise report regarding this. And so that's where the NOT 311 noise report came in as well, because then we could show people, we could show the city that this is a problem. And unless you take the data, even if you can't enforce, even if there isn't a bylaw to enforce, because they're allowed, at least you have the data point and can know where it's a problem and if that problem is getting worse over time.
So the map become an evidence which you can present it to the local councillors and the city to say, look, we have a problem here.
Yes, and it's evidence not only to the city councillors, but it's also evidence for people themselves. And this is where I thought I was alone in how I felt about noise. And then when I started talking with people and they were like, no, I feel the same way. And so the NOT 311 noise report became a community. And now we are a community of people who care about noise. And so when I do sound level measurements with meters, I can share back with people that, yes, you have 124 noise spikes a day. Yes, this is a problem, and here it is. You're not alone. And so people are now sharing their story with city councilors and deputing at city committees. And that is so important, because nothing can change somebody else's opinion as much as a story of being negatively impacted by something you have absolutely no control over.
How are the policy makers and local politicians receiving all of this?
I am presenting No More Noise Toronto as a collaborator and as a willing partner to work with the city. And because I'm focusing on data and process, I've presented charts, I've presented maps, I've presented my buffer analysis, my NOT 311 noise report. And I would say there's very little that cities can just do nilly-willy because they think it's a good idea. They need to have people tell them what to do. They need to have people engaged. And that's where taking it from a NOT 311 noise report, getting people to sign up for Noise News, coaching people on how to speak to city committees, educating them on the civic engagement process, then sitting with them and demonstrating by example how you do a deputation, how I can share information. Connecting with people is so important, and it's incredibly rewarding to feel that change is possible.
You've been working with other groups and advocacy agencies outside of Toronto. How are other cities dealing with this?
I get Google alerts for noise, for vehicle exhaust, for all of these things. And it's a problem worldwide, really. Our world has gotten louder. And I don't know if you know this, but during the pandemic, our world actually vibrated less on the Richter scale. how do we vibrate the world through our automotive uses, through shipping, through our vehicles, through our train, all of that other stuff. We are actually collectively getting louder. And so there is actually a really good network. So in the US, there's Quiet Communities. In the UK, there's the Noise, Anti-Noise Coalition, and there's groups all over the world. And we're actually starting to connect with one another. And I think that there's going to be maybe some interesting Google groups or something that we're trying to figure it out, because in different cities, they're trying different things. And noise is actually, it's a hyper-local problem, but it's also a national problem because it's a health problem. There's things that are coming together that's like this perfect groundswell of people that want to make a difference. And we're just trying to figure out how to do that, because a city will do it differently than a country will.
It's interesting to hear you say that noise are local problems, and yet we see there's this global movement from pockets of the world all advocating for this quieter time and quieter environment and are getting connected to combat this global issue.
Air pollution is still number one, according to the World Health Organization. And we have done so much for mitigating air pollution. But when you think about it, if you have something that's spewing emissions into the air, it takes a while for that to clean. But if you cut the noise at the source, you're done. The benefits are instant. And that's where I think we can really make some headway and not let noise go from number two to number one.
How do you stop the noises at the source?
It depends on the source. For example, amplified sound is something that is bothering a lot of people. Right now, we've got portable Wi-Fi speakers that pump out the bass beats, and those end up in city parks. And they also are part of nightclubs, and sound leaks out. There is all kinds of interesting technology, noise-canceling technology. The same technology that is in your headphones or earbuds can be used in rooms. And what happens is that there is a canceling wave sent out from the technology that cancels the sound coming in. That's how earbuds and all of those work. The same thing can happen in a room where it basically, an algorithm that studies the sound waves coming, and it sends out a canceling wave. If we talk about vehicles, there are already emission standards and decibel standards on vehicles. Those should be implemented right away with no questions asked. If we look at sirens are actually a necessary sound, but they don't have to be as loud as they are. There's something called broadband sirens where you wouldn't hear it on the 12th floor, for example. But right now you can hear a siren on the 54th floor. So it's about looking at the source and then making it less noisy if it's necessary, and then also reducing it as much as possible or eliminating it so that it's not people that have to adapt to the noise. The sound is reduced right at the source, and then we don't have to worry about it.
Can you tell me any innovation that you're really excited about?
There's a couple, actually. So one of them is about quiet restaurants. And there was an article I read a year or so ago, and it was like, why are restaurants so loud? It turns out that if you can't talk with the people that you joined, that you came into the restaurant with, you're going to drink more. But there's a whole bunch of people who would actually like to go to a restaurant and talk with someone. In Toronto, there's a group called the Anti-Noise Pollution League, and they actually have a list of quiet restaurants that you can go to. And it's not just for people that are hard of hearing. It's actually just for people that want to have a nice place to relax and not be subjected to somebody else's music choice. There's actually one more that I want to tell you about. In Toronto, there's this amazing group called Civic Tech. And I've presented to them a number of times on noise and my mapping and all that other stuff. And they were inspired to actually build their own sound level meter. And what it is, a bunch of people got together. They created a tiny little case. It's about 1 inch by 1 inch, maybe a little bit bigger. And it connects to Wi-Fi with power. And it transmits sound levels in the neighborhood. And so there's no audio. So there's no confidentiality breached. But the idea with this is that this is a sound level meter that somebody could buy for $50 and put it outside of their home, and it will transmit the sound levels to the cloud. And then because that's volunteer information, that information is available to everyone. And then this is a way that we can start to create a noise heat map of cities, and also a way maybe that For example, bylaw officers could monitor a problem establishment and not have to wait for residents to complain, but the sound level meter is reporting the sound levels from that area, and then they can go and check it out if it's 3 a.m. and they're blasting 60 decibels or 70 decibels of music. So I just think that is like pure citizen engagement, and people that learned helplessness from noise being taken away, and suddenly people can do something. They have agency. And I really am thankful that so many people are starting to come out and say, I want to do something. What can I do? And many people have ideas, actually. I get an email every week about an idea. Not all of them are feasible. Somebody wanted to ban Harleys. That'll be a really hard sell. How about we just make sure they hit OEM standards? Let's do that. But it's exciting. I'm very excited for what's going to come in the next few years.
Thank you very much, Ingrid, for all of your hard work. And thanks for joining us today.
It is my pleasure. And thank you so much for the support from Esri.
Thanks for listening to the Esri and the Science of Wear podcast. And thanks to Ingrid Bidet. If you like this episode, please share it with a colleague.